Good morning, everybody. There's a passage in Luke chapter number 19 that says that Jesus was coming into Jerusalem before his on his triumphal entry. They're laying palm branches before him. And the Bible says in Luke 19, they began to rejoice and praise God with a loud voice. And then the Bible says the Pharisees said to Jesus, "Lord, rebuke your disciples. Lord, your disciples are being too loud. They're being too excited. They're being too exuberant. They're being too loud." And Jesus responded to the Pharisees and he said, "If I tell them to be quiet, the rocks will cry out." Amen? Thank you, Travis, for leading us this morning in such joyful and celebratory praise to God, because we don't want rocks crying out in Maryville, because the Lord has given us a voice to praise God and celebrate Him and what He's done for us, because it is all about Jesus. That's why we're here today, as was introduced at the beginning, and then also during our communion time. Jesus is enough. He absolutely is. Thank you for being here today. Thank you for gathering. For our visitors, we're so happy that you've made the decision to be here with us today. So we're talking about real-life discipleship in this series of lessons, what it really means to be a disciple of Jesus. And we kind of concluded last week's sermon talking about how that some somewhat bleak statistics about the state of religion and Christianity in America today, and how that if we're going to turn this program around, what we've got to do is we've got to be dedicated, every one of us, to the mission Jesus gave us to go and make disciples. And how do we do that? We do that by coaching one another to always be growing and maturing in our spiritual lives, being closer to Jesus. And so that's what we've got to do. And so we kind of ended last week's sermon about the importance of, if we're going to make a difference, we're going to have to change the program. We can't keep doing what we've been doing. We've got to reevaluate who we are individually and as a church to make sure we're on the mission that Jesus gave us to do. So we're going to pick up right there where we ended last week and start right there today in a lesson that I've entitled, Making Disciples, Not Cultural Christians. And as we get started with that, I want to share with you just a brief news clip. You may have seen this on the news some time ago.
According to Pew Research, the number of Americans who consider themselves Christian dropped approximately 8% in 7 years. That means 71% identify themselves as Christians. 3% consider themselves religiously unaffiliated. Pew says while the drop in Christian affiliation is particularly pronounced among young adults, it is occurring among Americans of all ages and ethnic backgrounds.
Okay, that was maybe just a little bit hard for some of us to hear, but basically what they're talking about in this news article is that last year, Pew Research released a study that showed that there's been a dramatic shift in the religious landscape of our country. There's been a dramatic shift, particularly among those that consider themselves to be Christians. In 7 years, it has dropped 8%. 71% of people now identify as Christians, while 23% consider themselves religiously unaffiliated. Now, many people have noticed this. This has been widely broadcast through articles on the internet and through the news media. And so a lot of people have pointed to this research and they've said, you know what this is saying? We are right now, as we speak, witnessing the death of Christianity in America. That's what a lot of people will say. Now, in response to that, I want to share with you a cartoon that was done by Adam Ford some time ago that I think really kind of helps put this in perspective just a little bit. Here's America today. You've got over here on your left the non-Christian. You've got here over here on your right the Christian. And right here in the middle is a guy whose shirt says, meh. Now, the guy to the left, the non-Christian, says, "I'm definitely not a Christian." The guy to the right says, "I am definitely a Christian." Now, here's what was happening 20 years ago in our country. 20 years ago, the guy in the middle, the guy that says, "Eh," he basically says this, "I honestly don't care that much about following Jesus, but it's socially advantageous for me to self-identify as a Christian, so that's what I do." So he stands over here on the right beside the Christian and says, "You know, it's just to my advantage socially. It's expected, and therefore I self-identify as a Christian. Now, America today has changed, though, because the guy in the middle here that was over here at the right with the Christian, the meh guy, he has now migrated over here to the other side, over here to the left with the non-Christian. The non-Christian's still saying, I'm definitely not a Christian. The Christian to the right here is saying, I definitely am a Christian. And the guy in the middle is saying, okay, so times have changed, and it's no longer socially advantageous for me to self-identify as a Christian, so I stopped, and I'm on this side now. Now, here's what the headlines are saying in response to that. All the news headlines, like the report we just saw from CNN, basically are saying this: wow, Christian, Pew Research says that you're dying over there. This is what the non-Christian says. There used to be two of you on your side, now there's only one, so you need to be worried. But here's what the truth is. The Christian speaks up and says, no, there really was only one of me before, and there's still one of me. The meh guy, he just got more honest. And that's really, I think, what is taking place. And then he goes on to say, and oddly enough, I feel healthier than I have in a long time. What we're actually seeing today is not the death of Christianity in America. What we're seeing, as the cartoon depicts, is a shift in the what we might call cultural Christian. And I think because there's a shift happening, it provides a tremendous open door of opportunity for those of us that are disciples of Jesus to really get back on mission and start making a real difference in our world. You see, Jesus calls you and me, every one of us, to not just follow Him, but to not just to identify with Him, but to be an apprentice of His. And there's a dramatic difference, you see, between a disciple of Jesus and a cultural Christian. What's a cultural Christian, you might ask? Well, we might define it this way. A cultural Christian is someone who, in our context, in our society, socially identifies as a Christian for various reasons, although in their everyday walk of life, they really are not following or living by Jesus' teachings. And it gives me no pleasure to say that the reality is, in America today, we live in a context where cultural Christianity is the norm in our culture and in our churches, while actual biblical discipleship is the exception. Cultural Christianity really is the underlying reality of America and has been for a long, long time. Every year, just like we saw in the news report, somewhere between 70 to 80% of Americans, when polled, report that they are identified, self-identify as Christians, and in fact, most of those will attend church on a rather regular basis. And yet, when you look at the behavior of our lives, let's put us all in there, many times our lives look unchristian in our behavior. There's been extensive research done lately by the Barna Institute, and they have discovered that 3 out of 4 people in America consider themselves Christian. In fact, half of them would identify as being born again, a born again Christian. And yet, when we examine the lifestyles of us Christians, they found that statistically, our lives are no different than non-Christians. When asked on surveys of those that of us that identify as Christians in America, most of us are just as likely to watch pornography, just as likely to consult a psychic, just as likely to physically be in fights and physical altercations and abuse of others, just as likely to get drunk, just as likely to use illegal drugs, just as likely to tell lies, and just as likely to seek revenge as the non-Christian around us. Now, I want to tell you that's a scandal. And it's particularly a scandal in the Bible Belt. Christianity, for many people in our society, many of us even, let's be honest, has become kind of like a social club where people are just part of churches for the wrong reasons. So the question that I would ask is, well, how did we get there? How did we get to a place where so many people in America are simply cultural Christians and are not biblical disciples of Jesus? I'm convinced the way we got there is that we in the American church created a monster. A Frankenstein monster of the way we do church that is really a man-made system and a man-made style of evangelism that quite honestly is unbiblical. And because it's unbiblical, it has produced an unbiblical result. In the first place, evangelism, I would say for the last many decades in our country, has focused on making believers, not on making disciples. Remember what Jesus told us our mission is. Go and make disciples. But our evangelism approach has more times focused on just making as many believers as we can. So we did massive, and I'm speaking now in a wide cultural context, okay, in America. We went on massive door-knocking campaigns. We had lots of revivals and crusades. We tried to get as many people to pray Jesus into their heart as possible. We tried to get as many people baptized as we could. And so the goal was really the number of converts that we can get to believe in Jesus while there was little or any coaching for discipleship. Now, what was the result of that? Lots of people in America who identify as Christians by belief, but don't really live as disciples in their behavior. Secondly, evangelism has been for a long time centered right here with the church building. We tried to invite as many people to church as we could by having appealing, seeker-sensitive services and events. The goal was invite as many of your friends as you can to come sit in the church building, to be exposed to Christian atmosphere. You know what the result of that has been? The monster of consumer Christianity, where we have trained people, come to the building and we will serve you a platter of what you really are desiring and want. And so people then come to church expecting to be served. And if they're not satisfied, they leave this church and they go church hopping to find one and that does satisfy them. So instead of training people to be servants, we have trained them, because of our evangelistic approach, to come to church to be served rather than to serve. But then thirdly, this style of evangelism has created a situation where our society, particularly in the Bible Belt of America, is flooded with cultural Christians. And so evangelism has become what we might call denominational competition. In cultural Christianity, a person's allegiance is really more tied to the church they attend than it is with any kind of real living relationship with Jesus Christ. It's similar to politics. People blindly identify, I'm Methodist, I'm Baptist, I've always been Presbyterian, I'm Church of Christ, because that's the team they've always played for. Evangelism focuses then on trying to get somebody to change teams. Come over to our team, come to my church, and here's why you should. Here's why my church is right and your church is wrong. And there's very little discussion that ever really takes place about a personal walk with Jesus, about really trying to emulate the behavior of Christ in your life. And so what's the result? The result is lots of religious arguments and debates about minute points of doctrine that have burned relationships and alienated people from each other. You see, there's a drastic difference between cultural Christians and disciples of Jesus. I want to compare them for you. A cultural Christian says, I believe in Jesus, while a disciple of Christ, a disciple of Jesus, says, I truly trust and follow Jesus. A cultural Christian will sing to Jesus, while a disciple of Jesus truly surrenders their life to Him. A cultural Christian will applaud Jesus and will applaud and celebrate lots of Christian-type things and events in culture, while a disciple of Jesus says, I want to actively, personally participate in the mission of Jesus. A cultural Christian says, you know what, I do my church thing, but then, you know, my life is my life the rest of the time, and they maintain a safe distance from Jesus. But a disciple of Jesus says, I can't get close enough to him. I want to get as close to him as I can. A cultural Christian says, well, I study Jesus, and they study a lot about Jesus, listen to a lot of sermons, go to a lot of Bible classes, but their lives remain completely unchanged. But a disciple of Jesus says, I want to follow hard after Jesus and experience the most deep transformation and change of life that I can and be challenged every day toward that. A cultural Christian basically uses Jesus to fulfill their own personal agenda. They pray to Jesus, they serve Jesus because they feel like they got to pay their dues so that they'll be blessed by Jesus in some way. But a disciple of Jesus says, I'm willing to throw myself completely into the mission that Jesus gave. A cultural Christian is very fluent in religious language. They know how to say the right things in the right way, using the right terminology, whereas a disciple of Jesus says, you know, I'm more concerned about who people are before God than about whether or not they use the right technological, theological lingo or not. Now, there's a big difference then between the cultural Christian and the disciple of Jesus. But how did we get to the place where it seems we are flooded with cultural Christians? We've already looked at some of that. But I want to say to you that probably the reason we got there is because of this life principle. The system that you're using is perfectly designed for the results that you're getting. You can take that to the bank, either in your personal life or in our life together as Christians, as a gathering. The results that you're getting them because the system you're using is perfectly designed to get those results. So if you're not satisfied with the results of your life, if we're not satisfied with the results of the direction that cultural Christianity has taken us in our country, the only way to change it is to change the system. It has to be changed. The institutional church, we've known it in America, has been a factory for making cultural Christians. And really not focus too much, or not as much as it should, on making disciples of Jesus. And let me show you the difference. What kind of system have we been using? Let me contrast the difference between what might be called classroom discipleship versus intentional relational discipleship, which is what we've been focusing on this entire series, is intentional relational discipleship. In classroom discipleship, you study the Bible as a textbook for your doctrine. But in intentional relational discipleship, you study the Bible as a means to have a personal relationship with Jesus. In classroom discipleship, you're basically aiming information at a person's head, filling their mind with knowledge. Whereas in intentional relational discipleship, you're not just aiming at the head, you are, but you're also aiming at the heart, which then produces a different type of lifestyle in the way that a person lives. Classroom discipleship tends to be highly academic, whereas intentional relational discipleship focuses on teaching and modeling and coaching one another and being involved in each other's lives as we walk together on the journey to be more like Jesus. Classroom discipleship emphasizes a lot of facts and knowledge, whereas intentional relational discipleship emphasizes life application. That's what we're after. In classroom discipleship, basically, it's about information transfer. The goal is to get as much information across to you as possible, whereas in intentional relational discipleship, the goal is transformation of your life. In classroom discipleship, you're basically teaching the Bible to people, whereas in intentional relational discipleship, you're teaching people the Bible. There's a big difference between those two. In classroom discipleship, you have a very hard start time when the bell rings and a stop time when the bell rings, and it's a very quick time. Whereas in intentional relational discipleship, you may meet in somebody's home on a very frequent basis, sometimes daily, getting together to talk about your Christian walk, and it takes a lot more time and personal investment. In classroom discipleship, you're dependent upon the teacher to have all the answers, whereas in this kind of intentional relational discipleship, you're all trying to figure it out together. In classroom, it's in a large group, whereas in a more relational context, it's in a more small group. In classroom discipleship, you're most worried about the numerical growth of the class, whereas in intentional relational discipleship, what comes first is the spiritual development of the individual. The lesson is the agenda in the classroom, whereas in intentional relational discipleship, doing life together is the agenda. The setting is more formal in the classroom, and in intentional relational discipleship, the setting is more casual. So you see, the way we've been doing church, I tried to establish for you at the outset of the lesson, has been by and large producing large numbers of cultural Christians in America. And we have not been really making disciples the way that we should. And if that's the case, you can debate me about whether that's true or not. But if that is the case, it is time to change the system. It's time to go back to Jesus' organic way of making disciples. It's time for what Jim Putman calls a disciple shift. If we're going to start making disciples of Jesus, not just making people that culturally identify with Jesus, but instead people whose lives are being changed and molded to apprentice after Jesus, it's going to require a fundamental change in the way we do church and the way we think about church. Because listen, we need fewer cultural Christians. I'll say more about this at the close. And we need more disciples of Jesus. The change we need is the plea we've been giving lip service to this whole time. We need a real restoration movement. We need to restore Jesus' mission and His method for making disciples. Making disciples who then make disciples in intentional relationships in small group settings, just like Jesus did with His 12. Now, let's kind of drive it home here. It's a fundamental truth of life that every kind produces according to its own kind. Here's what I mean. If you plant watermelons in your garden, don't be shocked if you don't get any corn harvest. Because watermelons produce after their own kind. Corn produces corn. Watermelons produce watermelon. And guess what? Cultural Christians produce more cultural Christians. If we want to make disciples of Jesus, only disciples of Jesus can make more disciples of Jesus. You can only make disciples if you yourself are truly all in and have apprenticed yourself to the Jesus life. So it starts with becoming a disciple yourself. And maybe today you're sitting here and you're thinking through this sermon, if you're tracking with me, you may be really doing some self-reflection and you're saying, you know, he's right, and I've just kind of been a cultural Christian. I want to say to you, now's the time to make the move from cultural Christianity to being a real disciple of Jesus. How can you make that move? Well, it starts by the decision to just fully surrender your life to the Lord. Completely. Not just on Sunday, but Sunday through Saturday, all week long. The Christian author G.K. Chesterton, many, many years ago, famously wrote these words I want to share with you and make a point from it. He said, "The Christian ideal has not been tried and found wanting. It has been found difficult and left untried." What Chesterton is saying is, it's not that the idea of being a disciple of Jesus, people have tried it and it didn't work, therefore, and it didn't fulfill me, it didn't give me what I wanted, so they abandon it. No, the problem is people have tried being a disciple of Jesus, they found it to be difficult because of what it requires. They've looked at it, it's difficult, and they've really never really tried it. They've never really tried it. Now, why does Chesterton say that it's difficult? Because being a disciple of Jesus, by definition, right out of the gate, Jesus says, if you want to follow me, Luke chapter 9, if you want to follow me, you must deny yourself. Take up your cross daily and follow me. You see, to follow Jesus means a life of total surrender. It means to totally deny your selfish ways, to die to yourself, to take up your own cross of putting yourself to death and fully embracing the Jesus life. Now you see, following Jesus, the process of discipleship is really not that difficult. Jesus would say, "My yoke is easy and my burden is light." Following Jesus is really not that hard. What is hard is stepping fully into discipleship to start with and the death to self that it requires. This is probably not a great illustration. It's the best I've got. It's kind of like skydiving. Once you're out of the plane, it's relatively easy. It's stepping out there that's hard. When you fully give your life to the Lord and you enter into an intimate relationship with Him, do you know what intimate relationships bring? More time than not, it's a law of nature. When two people fall in love and they get married, more times than not, the intimate relationship results in reproduction. You see, so if you're in an intimate relationship with Jesus, you've gone all in and you truly are a disciple of Jesus, that intimacy of relationship will reproduce itself. It can't help but do that because disciples make disciples. But that takes an investment. There are no shortcuts to making disciples. You see, in the church, this cultural Christianity phenomenon that we've talked about at the beginning, the reason why we've got so many cultural Christians that have just been the meh guys in the middle that are now moving to the other side because it's no longer culturally advantageous for them, the reason we've got so many is because we have been, as churches, trying to find shortcuts to the mission of Jesus. Well, let's put a sign out and put an ad in the newspaper and invite people to come to our building. And if we can just get them in the building, then maybe they'll hear a message and they'll come to Jesus. It's like a shortcut. We're depending on people reading the newspaper. We're depending on people responding to a newspaper ad. We're depending on people to find our building for them to come to us. We're depending on one person's 25-minute or maybe 45-minute lesson to convert them to Jesus. We've tried shortcuts. And I want to say to you that you can't improve on Jesus' method. Jesus gave us the right method. And it's nothing short of a time investment of investing in the lives of other people. Now, before I throw us all under the bus, let me just say that as I look across this crowd, there are significant faces of people that in the history of this church have made unbelievable investment in the lives of people. I'm going to tell you something. That's one of the reasons why I'm here. And one of the reasons why the Lord won't let me leave here is because I see in you, now let's be honest, not all of you, but I see a great number of you that have made unbelievable investments, an unbelievable sacrifice to pouring into the life of other people. But I will also say that that used to be more common among us 20 years ago, 30 years ago than it is today. Because I hear some of you tell stories of those investments, and I celebrate your story, but sometimes I want to ask you, when you tell me the story, what are you doing now? I don't want to de-emphasize that contribution, but what are you doing now to invest in the lives of people? What am I doing? What are we doing? Because look at the biblical model. Jesus, He specifically chose 12 men. There were also some women that were involved there. We saw that in a previous lesson. Luke chapter 8 tells us women followed with Jesus regularly with those 12 apostles too. We don't often talk about that. That's another sermon for another day. But Jesus identified 12 men and specifically chose them and entered into a three-year investment of relationship with them, pouring into them, making them into disciples. And then whenever he left, he said, now I want you to go and do the same thing. Go find some people and make them disciples too. That's Jesus' method. That's the way we do it. And that's what the early church, they followed what Jesus did. I mean, let me give you some examples. Just look, you don't have to look any further than the Apostle Paul. Paul followed the example of Jesus because he functioned like a spiritual coach or a spiritual parent. Listen to the words of Paul to Timothy, 2 Timothy 3:10-14. 2 Timothy 3:10-14. You, however, have followed my teaching. Period. No, he continues. You have followed my teaching, my conduct, my aim in life, my faith, my patience, my love, my steadfastness, my persecutions and sufferings. Continue in what you have learned and have firmly believed, knowing from whom you learned it. What is Paul saying to Timothy? Paul's saying, Timothy, you lived with me. You saw the life I lived. I modeled it for you. I coached you along the way. Now continue in that. He poured into him relationally. Paul wrote to a group of believers in Philippi and said in Philippians 4:9, what you have learned and received and heard and seen in me, practice these things. Now, that doesn't sound like to me. Paul, you know, once a week preached a sermon to a large gathering of people and said, okay, what I taught you, go do it. He says, no, what you saw in me, the investment of life was there. 1 Thessalonians 2:8 reflects it as well. So being affectionately desirous of you, we were ready to share with you not only the gospel of God, but our own lives as well, because you had become very dear to us. Now listen to that. Paul did not simply lead a Sunday school class once a week or preach a sermon to a large crowd and then end there. He focused on doing life with the people he was trying to disciple. In the Bible, relationships are the context and the environment for all disciple making. So if you're going to move from being a cultural Christian and into embracing true real-life discipleship and being a disciple who makes disciples on the mission of Christ, you have to choose to put the highest priority on relationships with other people. You've got to choose to deny yourself in relationships. Deny self-centeredness and begin pouring into the relationships with other people. Because Jesus said, true disciples will be made by him into fishers of people. Now, I want to close it up this way this morning. I'm going to make a provocative statement, okay? So, have I got everybody's attention? You ready? There's a sense in which I do not mourn the death of Christendom in America. I welcome it. Because in the sense that some people call America a Christian nation, they're talking about cultural Christianity, not real life discipleship. I welcome the demise of a degenerated, lowered, watered down form of Christianity. I welcome its death. To make way for those that are true disciples to not only be alive and real in culture and in relationship with Jesus, but to start making a difference and to shine in light. Light shines the brightest in the darkness. It always has, it always will. So I don't mourn the death of Christianity in the sense of cultural Christianity in America. It couldn't die soon enough to make known and to reveal those that are true disciples. To clean out the leaven that for far too long has pulled us all down. The lukewarm Christians, the cultural Christians. Go ahead, if you're the meh guy, go ahead and move to the other side. We'll be healthier over here without you. But you know what I'd rather you do, if you're the meh guy, is I'd rather you not move to the other side, but instead really understand what Jesus did for you. And really, for the first time, come over to this side. Maybe for the first time, fully embrace Jesus. Not just for convenience sake, for society's sake, for relationships with others' sake, like grandmama's meatloaf on Sunday, but instead, fully embrace the life of Jesus. Jesus told us on that day, many will say to me, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name, cast out demons in your name, do many mighty works in your name? Do you not hear what he's saying? He's talking about cultural Christians. People that call Jesus Lord, that say they believe in Jesus, in fact, maybe do believe in Jesus, and have even done a lot of religious things, and had a lot of great religious events as churches, casting out demons even, and doing many mighty works. And he says, and on that day I will say to you, I'll look you in the eye and say, do I know you? Because there was no personal relationship with Jesus. I saved our lesson text for the conclusion on purpose today, because all of it points to Luke chapter 5. In Luke chapter 5, Peter and Andrew, James and John are fishing on the Lake of Gennesaret, the Sea of Galilee. And they've been fishing all night. And I want you to listen to what the text says. When Jesus comes into the boat, Jesus says, I want you to put out into the deep and let down your nets for a catch. And listen to what Simon Peter says. He says, Master, we have toiled all the night and we took nothing. I want to say to you, the way we have traditionally, by and large, in a lot of places, the way we've been doing church in America, we have been working really, really hard all through the night, toiling hard, and we're taking nothing. We're not making disciples. It's not working. And why is that? Because we've been trying to come up with ways of catching fish that is different than the way the Master commands. Jesus tells him, he says, I know you've been working hard all night, but I want you to change and cast your nets on the other side. And when they did, they enclosed so many fish that it almost sank their boat. They had to call for other boats to help. Peter is so overwhelmed by the power of God and what God's plan can do, what Jesus' method can do, that he says, depart from me, I'm a sinful man, O Lord. And he looks him in the eye and says, do not be afraid. From now on, you will be catching people. It's only whenever he saw the power of God and confessed his sinfulness and invited Jesus into the boat and followed the Master's method by casting to the other side that they began to take in a large quantity of fish. But notice what Jesus says first. Do not be afraid. I want to say to us this morning, as individuals and as a church, we must not be afraid to leave the comfortable ways in which we've been fishing that have not worked. And we've got to make the leap and embrace true discipleship. We must not be afraid if we need to fundamentally change the way we have been doing church in order to restore the mission of Jesus. It is time for us to leave the nets and start fishing for people. The time is now. This morning, Jesus calls out to you. He stands in the boat and he sees you out there languishing, swimming in the waters of life without direction or purpose. And he casts the net and invites you to come into the safety of his boat. If you're ready to reject cultural Christianity and embrace true discipleship of Jesus, now is the time. Today is the day. if we can have a study with you, if we can pray with you, if we can help you in any way, if you're ready to plunge your life into Christ in repentance and baptism, whatever we can do to help you, make your need known as we all stand together and sing.